hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
Welcome back to another episode, everybody. It is the No Better Than Average show. I am your co-host, Jacob, and with me is my pal, my buddy, my friend, my confidant, my other half, not my better half, because my wife will kick my butt if I say that, but my other half, Jeff. Jeff Cheney. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm three halves of a what?
Three?
Huh? Hey, Jacob, how's it going?
Three-fifths of a vote, I think, is what you are.
Solid three-fifths.
This is episode 80, which is just a nice big round number, and that's about all. I don't know. It's a highly divisible episode.
Nice big round co-hosts for a nice big round number.
That's right. I don't know. We've got stuff and things to talk about and some tech. If you guys have a comment, a question, a rant, you want to get in touch with us, please feel free to give us a call. Our voicemail has been lonely lately. We love hearing from you, and you can do that at 317-643-1212, and you will talk to a robot. You don't even have to talk to a human, so you can think of something witty to say and just spill your guts. We would love to hear from you. You could join our newsletter at nobettershow.com/join. That would be fabulous. And if you want to support the show and continue to have us bring you this amazingly mediocre product, you can do that at patreon.com/nobettershow, and that is patreon.com. I know that Jeff has been wicked busy this last week, so I have put a bunch of stories in here, and hopefully we can just banter and make it sound like we have things to talk about. But if you've got any stories to interject, Jeff, on the fly.
I do have a couple on the fly, but we'll save those. You save throw those. One out, and then I got a couple that I would like to make sure I talk about.
Absolutely. Well, one I want to throw out is just a real quick one, and I found this blog. I don't even remember now how I found it. I think I found it from Reddit, and it is a really interesting blog. I'm a science nerd, as you may have sussed out, and back in school, I really had a love of chemistry. I wasn't so much in the physics world. I was just not as good at the physics as I was at the chemistry, and I found this neat blog. It is from a chemist. His name is Derek Lowe, and he writes about a lot of things, but he has a column on his website, and I'll put a link in the show notes to it, called Things I Won't Work With. And it's just these amazingly fun articles of things he won't work with and why he won't work with them. And some of them are fascinating. I mean, there are some really, really nasty substances out there. Some of them I can't even begin to pronounce. One of his articles is Things I Won't Work With. And let me see if I can pronounce the name of this molecule. Hexanitrohexane azide isowerzetane. Yeah, that's all one big word.
Sounds like it would melt your face off.
It basically will. Hexanitrohexazide isowerzetane. And basically, it is a really nasty, highly unstable chemical that just does bad things to you. It's got the hexanitro chain is dangerous and explodey and all kinds of stuff. And anyway, it's a fun blog. I highly recommend checking it out. Derek Lowe, DerekLowe. If you can't be bothered to go check out the show notes, like I said, I'll put a link in the show notes and go check it out. Things I Won't Work With. It is a lot of fun. That is my quick tip for the day. I saw a really interesting article recently from an analyst. His name is Neil Seibert, and he writes a blog called Above Avalon. He is an Apple prognosticator, and not one that I had heard of before. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or Above Avalon, Jeff.
No, I have not.
So he wrote a really seemingly well-researched article this last week where he is predicting that Apple is poised for a big pivot. He is making the argument that he has been analyzing Apple's R&D spending, and he thinks that we are soon to see within the next like 2 years that Apple is not going to continue on the evolutionary trend, but they are going to do something revolutionary. And he's got a lot of facts and figures to back up his claims. And again, I will put a link to this article in the show notes because it's really something I think you should, if you're at all interested, go check it out. Especially maybe if you're not even a diehard Apple guy like we are, but maybe as an investor, because I think the consensus is that Apple's probably undervalued right now. I saw a news story that just today that Berkshire Hathaway just had to file their SEC stuff, and they're holding over $1 billion in Apple stock. So anyway, he has crunched the numbers and said that Apple is on track, and this surprised me, to spend over $10 billion in R&D this year. In 2016, it's up 30% from 2015, and if you compare it to 2012, they only spent $3 billion in R&D in 2012. So in 4 years, they have dramatically increased their R&D spending. He says, quote, in a few years, we're no longer going to refer to Apple as the iPhone company. They have also increased their R&D spend as a percentage of revenue substantially. It was R&D was 2.2% of revenue in 2012, up to 4.9% in 2016, and he is projecting it's going to be 6.8% next year in 2017. So I guess as far as R&D goes, that is a huge, huge number, like as a percentage of revenue, that most companies don't spend anywhere near that. He also speculates, quote, Apple is ramping up R&D because they have a few big bets that require a massive increase in investment. The two most logical areas for these bets are wearables and personal transport initiatives. In both cases, Apple is moving well beyond its comfort zone of selling pieces of glass that can be held in one's hand. Instead, Apple is literally building a new company with additional capabilities and strengths. So like I said, I'm going to put a link to the article. Go check it out. He makes a really compelling case on why he believes that these R&D increases are pointing to a pivot. And seems to be really hinting that the Apple car is not just going to be some tech that Apple demonstrates and says, hey, we've got this tech and we're going to work with licensing it. But he seems to kind of hint that he fully believes that Apple is going to transition into an automotive company, which I mean, that would be a pivot. I mean, as far as pivots go, you can't really deny that. I mean, they're making so much money now. They have, what, $230 billion? I think I just saw an article like $230, $233 billion in cash and cash assets. So that's not nothing. I mean, could they become a serious automotive player? Does that make sense?
I have a really hard time with this because building cars is hard. And there are so many components to building cars. I have to believe that if they're going to build cars, that they're going to buy a car company.
Maybe. Like,
I mean, I don't know what GM's worth right now, or Ford, or Chrysler. I mean, Chrysler got bought by Fiat too long ago. Okay, so I have a little bit of a conundrum on this because I think building cars is very difficult. And I think if anything, Tesla, if you hold Tesla up as a model for this, has proven that building a car is difficult. They have so far, I believe, I'm going to use rough numbers. These aren't exact. I know they're not exact, but they've made about 90,000 vehicles so far in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I believe they're going to fall firmly on their face because they have over 500,000 pre-orders now of this Model 3. And scaling up to that level of manufacturing, that's hard to do. Now, you know, granted, Apple has done that to a certain extent, but they've done that using, you know, Foxconn.
Right.
So ultimately, while I believe that Apple is going to design a car from beginning to end, I think that will happen. I don't think they're actually going to be manufacturing it. I think they're going to be, you know, working with a car manufacturer to make that to their specifications. Because it is really hard to manufacture something like that at scale, at the kind of scale Apple would want to manufacture vehicles. So, I mean, like, I could see them partnering with, I don't know, whoever, pick a company, Honda, Kia, Toyota, Chrysler, Ford, whoever.
Yeah, but the old model of how cars are made doesn't seem like it would fit and mesh well with Silicon Valley. Like, would it be just too much of a culture mismatch?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think if they get into the car business, it's going to be really hard for them to do. I mean, if you think about, you know, so I use this as an example. Yes, they built a foam, but they're not really manufacturing that foam. They're buying chips from, you know, when they first started. But
they are now. I mean, they have their they have their own fab plants. They weren't at the beginning.
Yes, but they're not fabbing the whole foam.
No.
I mean, they're paying Foxconn to do that. And my point is yes, they're making their own chips now. But when they first started, when they made the first iPhone, that was a off Samsung chip,
yep.
off the shelf
yep.
chip. So I mean, to try to get into building a car by yourself off the shelf, I mean, that is hard to do. I mean, it's really hard to do, and I can't see them jumping in, you know, and having their first car be that. I just think that that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, and you know what's interesting? You said could they buy General Motors? So I'm looking at General Motors' market cap, and apparently I don't know fully how the stock market works because their revenue was $140 billion last year, mm-hmm. but the market cap is under $48 billion.
Yeah, and that happens.
And Apple could actually buy
with cash.
General Motors and Ford and not spend $100 billion.
Yeah.
So for just a little bit over, you know, a little under half of their cash assets, they could buy General Motors and Ford. And boom, that's scale.
Yeah.
Now, I mean that's like a huge amount of inertia and history that you can't just pivot that overnight.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I think that they would partner with someone to make the vehicles to their specification.
Okay, but is any auto manufacturer out there going to do that? Are they gonna do badging like that?
You know, like BMW isn't going to, but there's been a lot of rumors around like that they approached BMW and BMW said no. But if they go to a GM, hell yeah. They'd be all over that.
You know, it's interesting, and you know, this is something that I don't see happening, you know, in 2 years, but you know, you could see something fruition come out of this in like 10. And I was having an interesting conversation with my wife the other day talking about, you know, manual transmissions and wouldn't it be a good idea to, you know, teach our daughter how to drive a stick shift because
no.
everyone should know how to drive a stick shift. And then I was like, well, you know,
waste of time.
Not only is it a waste, but by the time she's ready to start driving in 10 years, are we going to be having the conversation, do we bother teaching her how to drive an automatic or do we just teach her how to drive a self-driving car?
So here, let me throw this out there and just, you know, one of the stories that I added was the story about Apple buying a huge share of the Chinese mm-hmm. Uber rival.
Mm-hmm.
They just put $1 billion into Didi Chuxing.
Right.
Which is an Uber competitor in China. So let me throw this your way. What if Apple pivots on making cars not in the way that we're thinking? What if Apple is not selling cars to us?
But just rideshare?
What if Apple is creating a rideshare service using their own vehicles? So instead of building to scale for selling to individuals, you build to scale and sell to
an Uber
cities or
a city.
Or Uber or whatever. I mean, I'm just trying to think, you know, when they came into the phone market, they totally switched everything around. I mean, it was totally different. The carrier had no control over it. The way they did it was totally different. And I just wonder if when they get into let's call it the transportation segment, instead of thinking about it as an automobile, I mean, is Apple thinking ahead of the curve? Because, you know, we've ourselves have talked about, you know, are people going to own cars in 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe you pay you know, maybe if you're in a large city like New York or San Francisco, maybe you pay Apple $100 a month and there are certain service level agreements that you have a rideshare vehicle that will drive you around where you need to go. And that's it. And you pay a monthly fee.
In a New York or a San Francisco, I see that happening faster than 20 years. I mean, there's already Zipcar and
I'm
companies
just saying,
like
do
that.
Do they do something like that that we're not even thinking about? Like they're not going to build this, you know, Audi for you to go out and buy and run around in? Is it going to be something totally different that we haven't thought about? I'm just, you know, I don't know. I just feel like if Apple comes out with a car, like, you know, let's say Apple does a Tesla. Okay, we're going to come out with the Model I, mm-hmm. the iCar, or, you know, whatever. I kind of feel like, to me, that's more of a swing and a miss for Apple than anything that they've done so far, because I just don't know that. You know, people talk about is a portable commuting device, whatever you want to call that, a phone or whatever. I call it a portable computing device. Sure. Those are dead. That's old, last year's technology. Well, talk about last year's technology. How's a car not? I mean, cars have less of a future, in my opinion, at least on a commercial scale, than anything. I mean, we're running into problems with, you know, traffic and, you know, infrastructure and all that stuff. Do they come up with something totally different? I mean, I don't know. I hope that they come out with something that none of us are thinking about, because I like to hope that they have a lot smarter people than us.
Well, you know, this Neil Seibert, he seems to think that it's going to be a pivot to something we're not expecting.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a big one.
I don't think it's going to be I mean, if it's introducing the new Apple car, I'm going to be like, "Really? Okay." Yeah. I mean, not that I wouldn't be excited. I love cars. I mean, that's cool. And like people, you know, some people say, "I don't understand why they would want to do that." They would want to do that because anyone that's in design, I mean, that's like a big deal. Like, right. You know, having your own car, that's a big deal. You know, I understand the pleasure receptors that would spark in Johnny Ive. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand that as a business decision for Apple, because, again, cars typically don't have a huge margin, you know, in the new car world.
Right.
It's very hard to ramp up production. It's very expensive. I mean, you talk about how expensive it is to ramp up and make your own chipset. I mean, when you start talking about having to make, you know, transmissions and engines and seat belts and, you know, I mean, think about the production that you have to ramp up to do that. I mean, it's not easy.
No, and I mean, you know, Apple has always been a company of very healthy margins relative to whatever industry they're in. And I mean, what is a good margin on an automobile? I don't even know. I mean, I'm not that guy.
You know, 30%.
Well, I mean, that's Apple margins.
Yeah, it is, but that's Apple. Apple's margin is 30% in a world where everyone else is 10%.
That's true.
Or 5%.
So does that mean that they want 80%?
Yeah, I mean, so like, are they going to be okay with making the same that everyone else is making? I don't think that's what Apple normally does. I don't know. I really like the idea of them becoming a services company. It's what, you know, the whole Apple Music, the whole, you know, television that they're supposedly coming out with eventually, maybe kind of, sort of. I kind of like the idea of thinking about, you know, do we really need cars? Do we need individual ownership of cars? I mean, I want it, but I'm old.
I don't know. I mean, I'm right there with you, but honestly, if I knew that within 10 minutes of me pushing a button on my phone, every time a car is going to show up in my driveway and I can get in and I can, you know, not worry about my commute to work, or potentially even get on, you know, some sort of a, you know, satellite enabled Wi-Fi and be productive, or just screw around on Facebook or whatever it is for that, you know, 50 to minutes to an hour, which honestly, if there's more self-driving cars, that commute could come down, because as the cars network and talk to each other, there's no reason that it, you know, it should take any longer than the physical time it takes to drive.
Sure. And the other thing to think about is if you know, if you want to take that, if you want to take a step back at that, if you had a car for your family that was self-driving, you could have one car for your family easily.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, there are other parts of that, like, you know, if they don't want to take the step of no one owns a car, maybe you market it as, this is a self-driving car that you only have to have one car for your family, because, you know, you can hop in and go to work, and then it'll come take your wife to work, and it knows that little Johnny has a, you know, dentist appointment at 2:00, and that's in your calendar, so it goes and picks him up and takes him where he needs. I mean, there are lots of things you could do in there, but here's the thing about all this stuff that we're talking about. Is you're talking about, in my opinion, like liability issues like they have never, ever had to deal with.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's really fun to speculate. I can't wait to hear what they have to say, because obviously they're going to do something else. I mean, there's going to be the next thing. I don't know what that thing is going to be. I mean, a lot of rumors point to some kind of transportation, you know, item of some kind. But I really firmly believe if here's the thing, like, if Apple comes out with a car, and let's say, I mean, they don't make cheap things.
No.
So, like, are they going to make a $100,000 car? And then,
yes, I mean, how many? I think they are.
Yeah, I know. But how many of those are they going to sell? Because it makes it. So here's one of my arguments is one of the reasons that I even cringe at a $35,000 Tesla is there is a, and maybe Apple can overcome this because they're so big and they're so well known and their brand, you know, recognition is so high. Mm-hmm. But when I think about buying, you know, throwing down $35,000 on a Tesla, what if that Tesla comes out and there's a whole bunch of problems and they've made hundreds of thousands of these and they all have a problem? I mean, can Tesla survive that?
That's a very real concern.
And that's why I personally would not feel comfortable buying a Tesla.
Well, just not because, a first generation anyway, right?
Not even, yeah, exactly. And you know, because if they have a huge swing and a miss on this, then I think Tesla's done. And do you really want to have a car that then is basically because Tesla is a very software centric, you know, piece of equipment? If they go under, what happens?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, you don't want your car software to be open sourced and just a bunch of, you know,
yeah,
hackers keeping it up. I mean, that.
No.
And would that even be approved? Because obviously then there's nobody to go after if the software goes rogue and starts killing buses full of nuns.
So I don't know. I mean, this is going to be very interesting to see, you know, where we go and what happens next.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's a good topic. It scares me a little bit. I think Google's approach of creating the self-driving part to add to already existing cars is probably a better approach, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Building cars is hard.
Well, and you know, Google is doing it too. I mean, it's not just Apple.
No, but Google is making devices that you add to existing cars. I think they just signed a deal with Chrysler to do a whole bunch of whatever the Chrysler minivan is. And
oh, really?
Town and Country.
I hadn't seen that.
The Chrysler Town and Country. They just signed some kind of deal to do 1,000 of those as self-driving and adding their self-driving stuff to them and blah, 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 blah.
But so, I mean, can't have one today. Like, you can't go buy one.
No, you can't go buy one. No.
Yeah.
And I think there's still a lot of legislation on, you know, decisions that have to be made when you start talking about self-driving cars. You know, a lot of which we've talked about on this show, you know, when the computer software gets to a situation where, well, if I go this direction, it's going to save the occupants of the vehicle, but it's going to kill 10 civilians.
Right. Well, and then it has to know, like, how many people are in the other car. And
yep.
It has to. Yeah. I mean,
there's. Yeah.
I don't want to be the programmer on the ethics module.
No. See, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Ooh, well, that took a dark turn.
Hey, let me throw one out there that I wanted to at least mention. I think it's okay to just talk about. There's not really a big link for the show notes or anything on this, but I don't know if you saw this, that Wendy is planning to offer automated self-service ordering kiosks to its over 6,000 restaurants.
I had heard something about this. I haven't read any details, but I did see some headlines.
So it said at the second half of the year, Wendy's will have a self-service kiosk available to franchisees and will be rolling it out to around 300 restaurants that it currently itself owns in New York and California.
Wow.
Now, over 75% of the Wendy's locations are franchise-owned, so it will be up to individual franchisees as to whether or not they want to adopt this self-service kiosk model. However, the Wendy's owned restaurants in California and New York, which are the two states that are pushing for the $15 minimum wage, they are going to be pulling out employees and putting in self-service kiosks in those locations that are owned by Wendy's.
So is this going to look like the you check it in the at the Meijer or Walmart where it's
you're going to go
five
in
kiosks and one guy standing there?
Yeah. You're going to go in. They probably have if you go to a Wendy's, the person that's taking the order orders, they end up doing they run back and get the food and bring it up. And I think they're going to just have like one person that does that. And then instead of taking your order, they'll have big touch screens and you know, oh, I want a Baconator, you know, large with the extra large frosty. And then you put your money in And that's it.
You know, I don't know how I feel about that. Part of me is sad that you are further alienating people from each other in society. And part of me is happy that I potentially would never have to talk to a fast food employee again.
Well, you know, it is interesting. You know, the idea of raising the minimum wage is all well and good until you don't have a job. I mean, to me, that's what I take out of this.
You know, but business always finds a way. I mean, the business owners are going to gripe and they're going to do everything in their power to not until it becomes the law. And then they find a solution, whether it's self-service kiosks or...
But that's my point. I mean, how is this... So if you're raising the minimum wage and that's causing people to say, well, I guess you don't have a job anymore. Yeah. Are you really helping, you know, employees? Or did you just take their job away?
Man, I don't know. I mean...
I mean, I understand.
That's a tough one. I mean,
I understand the idea, and minimum wage is really interesting because minimum wage has not gone up relevant to other things. So I understand the idea that minimum wage might be too low. Because if you look at like, so I'll give you an example, and these are two far ends of the spectrum, but you know, back when I was making minimum wage, which thank God was a very long time ago. And I was in high school, you know, 20 years ago. Minimum wage was right around $5.25 an hour.
Oh, yeah. My first job was, I was making 2 cents over minimum wage. I was making $4.26 an hour.
Yeah. Okay. Big so let's bucks. Even, let's go with four, you know, see, I may be remembering wrong. It may have been four something. Yeah. You may be right.
It was like $4.24, something okay. stupid like that.
That sounds about right. We would be right around the same time. Let's go with $4 just for the sake of argument, because I think minimum wage now is not even $8.
No, it's like $7.25, $7.50.
I think it's $7.25 is what
something
I want
like
to say. So in the 20 plus years that it's been since I've made minimum wage, it has not doubled.
No.
Right?
And that's been like 20 years. Yeah, $7.25 an hour.
Okay, let's look at prices of cars. They've more than doubled in that time.
Well, it's not just the minimum wage that's not kept up with inflation. Wages across the board have been stagnant for 20 years.
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, I understand the concept of we need to push wages up. The bad part is, and I just, we are at a point in where we're getting really close to lots of things being cheap. To do using machines.
Oh, yeah.
And we have to think about what kind of jobs we want to eliminate. It's going to be really scary, I think, in the next 50 years in the United States, because I just wonder.
Well, I mean, absolutely.
You know, those self-service kiosks, I mean, you know, they're going to be getting rid of a lot of employees, you know, that take orders. The other side to that is, and you know, my son brought this up, and you know, he's working fast food over this summer, so he did have some valid points. The first being that someone will have to maintain those, so that's going to create a job, right? So that's good. It's probably a more highly skilled job than the person that was taking the order, so that's probably a higher paying job.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting question is when they have these self-service kiosks, what happens if the power goes out or the computer systems go down?
Ooh, but what happens today if the power goes out or the computer systems go down the teenager behind the counter?
Okay, well, I can tell you what happens at McDonald's, where my son works. They call him from out back, and he comes up and figures it out manually and charges people money and takes money and gives them change.
But how do they even do that? Like, because odds are I'm going into McDonald's, I don't have cash.
Then you're not going to order.
Right.
I mean, like, if the computer system's down, you're not going to order. That is absolutely true.
And I feel like that's cash, the vast majority of people.
You're right. But I'm just saying you could still,
in theory. Yes, I will
take
give
an
you
order
that.
And fulfill that order if someone had cash. It, like some monster that came from prehistoric times that actually carries paper around in their wallets.
So let's assume my dad is at a McDonald's and the power goes out.
He could still
he
order
is
as long as he was
his...
at the one that my son's working at, because I think he may be the only one there that can go up and figure out how much the bill is, how much tax is, and how much you really owe, and then give you the appropriate amount of change.
Oh,
but, you know, that's okay.
So, but, you know, the flip side of this is, okay, But you can't say that if minimum wage wasn't going up, that these companies wouldn't be looking at these investments anyway.
Because they would be, absolutely. But it
may accelerate it.
It accelerates the ROI of it. I mean, if you increase wage cost and make people have benefits, and you start adding the ands and the ands and the ands, then all of a sudden that computer is much more attractive. You earn that money back, whatever you spend on that kiosk, you know, I don't know, $5,000 for a self-service kiosk, you get that money back quicker, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, but what'll happen is, so because of the necessity of the minimum wage increases in California and New York, they'll implement this technology. And then over 6 months, a year, 2 years, you know, other franchise owners in places where the minimum wage hasn't been raised yet, and if Congress doesn't do something, are going to see, oh, hey, look, our counterparts on the West Coast are, you know, they've reduced their labor cost by 60%. Well, okay, so maybe our ROI isn't 2 years, maybe our ROI is 4 years, but that's still ROI. And eventually the technology will become so ubiquitous that it'll be odd not to have it. And it'll be everywhere. And, you know, you're right, it will affect jobs. But I don't know, I don't know that we should be protectionist of jobs, you know, in the face of technology. But like you said, okay, so it's going to be a skilled position to maintain a kiosk. But it's not going to be 1,000 skilled positions across the country.
Absolutely not.
I mean, it's going to be, you know, you need one guy for every 100 stores or something like
that. Right, absolutely. Yeah, no, I know. I mean, go to school, kids.
I don't know if I would say necessarily go to school. I would say think long and hard about what can't be outsourced.
Yeah, I mean, when I say go to school, I mean, learn a trade that you know is something that people will need going forward.
Yeah. I mean, my wife's company, she works in a service division, and they basically service commercial equipment. And, I mean, some of the field techs who are trade skill guys, you know, dumb trade skill, blue-collar guy, I mean, they can make $60,000 to $100,000 a year. I mean, it's not, you know, crazy, you know, living the life of luxury money, but that's not bad money for guys that didn't go to college and didn't get $100,000 of debt. I mean, they learned the trade.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that. I don't know what the answer is, but I think that the world is going to be a different place by the time, you know, our little one is heading out into the world. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like for the people having kids right now.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I'd seen the headlines, but I hadn't read any of the details. That's interesting. I saw this one, which just makes me shake my head. Poor Microsoft. I don't know what they're doing or what they're going to do. But so if you have upgraded to Windows 10 anywhere, and I don't know how much you've used Windows 10, if at all, Jeff.
None.
Zero. One of the things that they did, they brought back the start button because people really hated the fact that it was gone in Windows 8. Hooray. But they promoted apps in it. Because it basically gives you a start bar, and then over to the right it pops out, and then you can have stickied app tile icons, kind of like Windows 10 on the phone, Windows phone. So they have just announced that with this coming anniversary update of Windows 10, which is expected in July, that they are going to double the number of promoted apps in the Windows 10 start bar. Now, this is not manufacturing. I bought a Dell, and I've got all this McAfee and other crap like that. This is actually coming from Microsoft. So they haven't said why they're going to do this, but I guess industry insiders think that they are really trying hard to raise awareness of the Windows App Store, which a lot of people have no idea exists. But it is out there just like the Apple App Store. You can go and shop for applications. They do in-app purchases. You can buy software. And honestly, it works pretty well. I have got one Windows 10 PC here at the house that's sort of the family computer, and have been able to download games and apps for the kiddo, and no problems there. It works fine. But I kind of forget about it between using it to set up stuff. I don't know if people are really going to flock to the Microsoft App Store or not. Prepare for more things to come there. And what's interesting, I saw in one press release, it was talking about the fact that some of the apps that may be promoted, it sounds like it's going to be dynamic. don't necessarily even have to be installed. Microsoft has the capability of pushing an app to your start bar. And then when you click on it, it goes, oh, well, you want to run this app. So now you need to come into the app store and download it and install it. So I've seen actually several friends on Facebook who have posted some negative things about this so far and sort of, you know, boo, Microsoft, why are you doing this to us? I don't know. I don't know if this is a good thing. I don't know if people will notice. I mean, people tend to not know these things about their computer. It's just an icon that they have to click on. But man, I don't know that I like it. And, you know, the other side of that coin is I want the manufacturers to stop installing their crapware and their bloatware too. You know, the Asus that we've got here has a bunch of garbage on it and it's popping up. Oh, you need to license this now. Your free trial ran out and it's stop it. I mean, I hate to be the Apple apologist, but you don't get any of that crap when you pay a little bit more. And I wish that you could have the option. It's almost impossible to find that option short of buying a business class PC, which nobody's doing. I mean,
no, absolutely. You don't do that.
I don't get it. I mean, a good example, my sister's looking for a laptop right now. And, you know, I said, just go buy a MacBook Air. It's done. You'll use it for 6 years at a minimum. Well, we don't want to spend that money. So she sent me a link. Hey, is this a decent laptop? And it's like $450, and it's an Asus. I mean, sure, it's a fine laptop, but it's not going to last you 6 years. And here in probably 2.5 or 3 years, you're going to buy another one for another $450. And guess what? You could have bought the MacBook, and you're not going to. And you would have gotten a better experience. It would have been nicer equipment. The software wouldn't have had a bunch of crap on it like you're going to get. I don't know. There is definitely a reason you pay a premium for certain products, and some people aren't willing to do that, but I don't know. It makes me frustrated. I guess I'm up on my soapbox now. I should get off, but and in addition, I guess Microsoft also just announced that they have closed in on 300 million Windows 10 installs. They have a goal of 1 billion. Which is interesting because I think when Windows 10 first was announced, there were still 1 billion computers running Windows XP. I did not see where that number has fallen to. And I will throw this out there. If you are still rocking a computer with Windows 7 or Windows 8 and you have any interest in Windows 10, you need to do your free update before the end of July, because after July 30th, they are going to start charging $119 for that update. So I'm sure that is going to slow their adoption a bit. And if you haven't done it yet and you've been procrastinating, make sure you pull that trigger. We only got a couple of months left. If you're a Windows 10 not a Windows 10 user, but a Windows user, and you want to go to Windows 10, I'm sure you are going to be jumping all over that, Jeff, with all of your Macs and Linux boxes there at the house.
Yeah, I have no Windows machines at all in my house. Zero.
We still have the one that that is the family PC. I just recently upgraded my desktop to a Mac Mini, and I have to say it is a beautiful piece of hardware. I mean, yes, you pay for it, but it's nice. It's small and quiet and sexy, and I love it.
Nice. So, hey,
yeah.
Did you catch this one? Because this one just cracks me all the up. Yeah, exactly. Did you see about the Budweiser rename?
No.
Wait,
know nothing about it.
So from May 23rd to November, whatever it is, whatever election day is, November 11th-ish, whatever Tuesday is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Election Tuesday. Sure.
Yeah. So from May 23rd to Election Tuesday in November,
okay,
Budweiser is rebranding their beer to be named America.
Can they do that?
They can.
Are they allowed to do that?
Yeah. So if you look at the label, it says America instead of Budweiser. It has E Pluribus Unum underneath it. It says indivisible since 1776, home of the brave, land of the free. If you Google this, like when I first read this, I like, this is from the Onion.
It does look like right from the Onion.
It is not. InBev is actually rebranding Budweiser to be called America.
To what end?
Because America, dang it!
Well, shouldn't they rebrand it to Merca?
Well, that's my take. I think they totally lost out.
The A is silent.
Yes, the A is indeed silent. So there you go.
I don't know if this is brilliant or just really go sad. Go pick yourself up
a case of America.
But it's just temporary. It's just for like 5 months or whatever.
It's from May 23rd until Election Tuesday.
But so does this mean that by law I have to go buy and drink Budweiser now? Because I don't want to.
I'm just telling you, man.
I'm looking just, at
when I saw this, I was like, this is fake. This is not real. And then I found it in the Wall Street Journal and I'm like, okay, maybe it is real.
I am looking at the New York Times. It is real. I have no words.
You know what's hilarious to me about this? Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch is not even an American company.
German, aren't they?
They're owned by a German company. InBev. Yeah, InBev bought them. And that's a huge German company. Anyway.
Belgian-Brazilian company.
Oh, there you go. I'm sorry.
But I knew they were European-ish.
Yes.
Wow.
Really, the difference between Belgium and Germany, there's really none.
It's the buffer between
France and Germany. They made something up.
I was going to say, I don't know that I could like point to Belgium on a map without stopping and thinking
Germany
about it.
Germany and France.
So it's Europe's taint?
It's interesting. I have a friend who is from Belgium, and he speaks four languages because he speaks French because he lives close to the French, but he also speaks German because there's a lot of people in Belgium that speak German. He speaks English and he speaks Italian.
What is the official language of Belgium? Is it Belgish?
I'm
assuming it's probably French or German.
I think it's French.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's kind of true for lots of places where there's multiple cultures so close together. I mean, you typically do speak multiple languages. Yes. Unlike America, where we speak American and are proud of the fact that that is all we speak.
Do we speak American or do we speak Budweiserian?
Okay, so you know what? Maybe America should take on Budweiser's name for the next few months. And we should be the United States of Budweiser. Oh, my God. I have no words. I thought you might
enjoy that one. So, hey, let us know if you're going to drink some America in the next few months. I can't tell you the last time I drank in an America, and I hope to keep it that way.
Well, I mean, that's really just a bottle of water, right?
A water that tastes horrible.
I am assuming that John Oliver will do some fabulous send-up of this on Last Week Tonight. I can't wait to see that. I hope that is a thing. Wow.
So there you go.
Wow. America. Wow. All right. Well, I think we've got time for one more story before we talk about what we love. And I thought this one was very interesting. I don't know if you saw this. I think the stories just came out today. So this is fresh. But Amazon has announced they are going to start selling their own line of branded food, detergents, and diapers. Under names such as Happy Belly, Wickedly Prime, and Mama Bear. Now, these products are going to be exclusive to Prime members. I know that one article I read said that analysts, industry analysts and brick-and-mortar stores are watching this very closely because they have pretty much acknowledged that all retail growth is currently online. Like, the days of retail growth happening in the physical world are just done, and there is no question that Amazon owns online. The article pointed out that Amazon accounts for half of all sales growth in U.S. e-commerce. So one company is accounting for half of all of the growth. That is huge. So this could potentially drive a lot of revenue to Amazon's bottom line because private label products typically have much higher profit margins than branded items. I also did not know this, but I learned that earlier this year, back in February, Amazon launched 7 in-house clothing brands too, which I had not heard of. I've not heard of these at all. Don't know anything about them, but you can go and check out Franklin and Freeman for men's dress shoes, Franklin Tailored for men's suits and accessories, James and Aaron is women's clothing, Lark and Row is women's clothing, also available in Canada. Like that's a big selling feature, I guess. Society New York, women's clothing, North 11, which is women's accessories for cold weather and Scout and Row for children's clothing. So I had no idea that they had had launched those. I really think it's going to be interesting because they are saying that this is Prime exclusive. And I know that they've had some missteps in the past. I think that they had a line of diapers a few years ago that I guess they leaked and had all kinds of problems with diaper rash and ended up canceling it and stopped selling them. So, I mean, you don't get too many chances to win your customers if you're selling them food or something that, you know, is a personal care item. I mean, they're going to have some really awesome and amazing products if they're going to use this as a driver to convince people to sign up for Prime. I mean, it's really difficult to differentiate on snacks and detergents and diapers. I mean, we are a nation that excels in making snacks and detergents and diapers. So what is Amazon going to bring to the table that's going to make me go, well, yeah, I'll buy that bag of chips and wait 2 days for it to be delivered? I mean, is it going to really be a thing that drives people to say, well, I got to have Prime now? I mean, diapers maybe, if they have a good diaper. I mean, I know I've heard it's a pain in the butt to keep yourself stocked in diapers, but snacks and detergent? I'm at the grocery store twice a week at least. I don't know. I didn't know if you'd seen that or what your thoughts were on that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Selling you know, house brands, I think, is going to be difficult. I mean, I don't know.
Unless they're really special or they have some interesting twist, because I know that there is that company, they advertise on a ton of podcasts, not this one. Hey, get in touch with us, guys. NatureBox. And, you know, their whole thing is a subscription model where you sign up for a snack package and get snacks every month. And I don't know if Amazon would do something like that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, when I want a snack, I'm going to go and get it. I mean, I want instant gratification. I don't want to click order and wait and have it delivered, heck, even the next day. You know, I usually want my snack right now. So I don't know. I'll be curious to see how they do with it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Are there any other quick ones that you want to throw in?
Just one more, because I like throwing in these fun, shocking ones. So did you see the baby box?
Baby box. I don't think so.
Okay, so Indiana, woohoo!
Okay,
go Hoosiers! has had installed the first ever Safe Haven baby box.
Oh, I have heard of this. Yes, I didn't know we were the first.
Yes,
that's a little sad.
So, this nonprofit company has installed in Woodhaven, Indiana, a small town near Fort Wayne, a baby box in the local fire department. It is an incubated padded box. Think of video return box, only you put your baby in it
like a night depository. You pull it down, you close it, then you have to open it again to make sure it turned all the way around and your baby dropped out.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, and I think I read that when you open it, or I heard on a radio, it triggers a 911 call so that it alerts authorities that there's a baby in there.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize that we were the first. I didn't know that was made us special.
Well, there you go.
Okay, is this a problem that people are like leaving perfectly good babies around that we need these boxes? I mean, really?
I think it's interesting because, so I don't know if you know, so Indiana has a safe haven law.
Yeah, and basically, but it's like 30 days, right?
It is. So basically, you can go and leave your baby at a fire department, a police station, a hospital. There's a list.
Right.
And they basically have to take the baby.
Right. No questions asked.
No questions asked. You walk away. And they're trying to prevent people from, you know, dumping them in a dumpster, out in the woods, whatever. And that happens. It happens. I mean, that does happen. And so the idea behind this is they don't even have to see a person to drop their baby off. They can just go. They pull the box thing down, they plop their baby in, they walk away.
Okay, you know, I mean, so I get that we're kind of making light of it a little bit, but I mean, that has got to be an excruciatingly difficult decision to make. And I mean, if you're on the bubble anyway, and it might be better off for the kid if you just can't provide for him, I mean, maybe you don't need that judgmental firefighter looking at you. I mean, I get it. I don't know. I can't, God help me.
Boxes don't judge, right? You just put that baby in there and that box isn't going to say a word to you.
Right. But being glib about it though, but I mean, if that's the difference
between
giving the kid a better life and not, I mean,
well, if it's the difference between throwing them in a dumpster and having them die and not, I mean,
absolutely
all for it. But you have to admit, like, if you go look at the picture on this, it's kind of, it makes me want to laugh. I mean, it's a sad, horrible, you know, horrific situation. But when you go look at the picture of this box that you put your baby in, it just kind of makes me want to
oh, is
laugh.
There a picture?
I'm sorry.
I need to find the picture. I don't know that I want to post safehavenbabyboxes.com. You can get your own. Oh, wow.
Safehaven Mall around this country is
doing
amazing
things. And it just started autoplaying the video. Come on, web designers. It's 2016. Stop autoplaying videos for me. Well, now this is interesting. It says, as of 2016, 3,153 infants have been safely surrendered to safe haven location. Oh, just surrendered, not in a safe haven box.
Yeah, there you go.
Huh. I mean, I guess I'm glad that that option exists for the people who need it. And especially if, you know, the alternative is abandoning your kid someplace where it's not safe, or, you know, throwing them in a dumpster or leaving them.
But you have to admit, it looks like it looks like the book depository at my library.
It kind of does. I'm
just saying.
Huh. It looks got little heat lamps in it. And
yeah. I mean, I think they really made them very safe. So good for them, right?
But, yeah, that's interesting. It says it's equipped with heating and cooling. And it has they've partnered with ADT. So emergency personnel is notified within 30 seconds that a newborn is placed in the box. So
in the box.
If you've got like a 15-year-old, can you just like cram their head in there and run away?
I think it's I want to say it's Arkansas that you can safe haven laws are up to the age of 16.
They just I want to say it's Lincoln, Nebraska, but they a year or two ago, and the only reason I know this is we were talking about this at lunch a few weeks ago with some coworkers, and it was like 16, and they just changed it a few years ago, and now it's more in line with I think the rest of the country. It's like a month or 6 months, something like that. But
30 days makes sense.
It used to be like to 16, and there was a case, and this is actually what prompted people to be outraged and change the law. But like a kid who was like 15 years and 300 days was they took his butt to the fire station and said, he is your problem now. We can't deal with him anymore. And they left him there and they were fine.
I can buy that.
And yeah, having just spent time with my wife's family and with some snarky 11-year-olds, I think that they should extend that safe haven law to like 30.
I know people who have 15-year-olds that are like, you know, got kicked out of school for smoking pot, and they're trying to get them to quit smoking pot, and the kid won't listen, and he's still smoking pot. And, you know, what do you do?
Like, move to Colorado.
It's still not legal in Colorado for a 15-year-old to smoke pot.
Oh, it's not? I thought that was good across the board.
No.
Oh.
So I'm just saying, like, I could see like being like, okay, screw you, dude.
I'm done with him. He's your problem now, government.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's I think the answer is don't have 15-year-olds. Because even the 15-year-olds that aren't smoking pot are still kind of obnoxious.
Well, yeah.
I mean, let's face it, from like 12 to 20, I think they're just horrible people.
Yeah. Well, I know I was, so if me I'm too. Any, you know, I mean, that's...
I'm not much better now, and I'm 40.
That's the way of the world, right?
It is, but you don't realize what a total little butt nugget you are at that age. And don't get me wrong, I am probably just as big of a butt nugget now, but I can acknowledge the fact that I am. When I was 16, I had no idea. I probably thought I was the most, sophisticated person around. And no, you're just a big butt nugget. I'm just putting it out there. All right, let's wrap it up. I think we have veered all over the place. Let's let these people get back to their day.
What is it that you love, Jacob? Throw it my way.
I would say my Mac Mini. I really like my Mac Mini. I'm going to save that for another day because I have got a more budget-minded thing that I love. I just picked up these Bluetooth earbuds. They are from a Chinese company. I believe it is pronounced Pfizer or maybe Phaser, but it is the BHS-730 Bluetooth earbuds. They are sweat-proof. They're really reasonable. They're like $35. I have them around here somewhere. I can hold them up and show you a picture of them, Jeff. What I really like about them is they are all tangled up on my desk because they're plugged in charging. Yeah, of course, that, there you go. My cordless headphones are all tangled up in cords, so I can't even show you. But they don't have like a big battery pack on them. They are just two little things that plug in your ear, kind of like a bullet. And they've got an inline control. They do, you know, volume. You can take and make a call. You can skip tracks and all that fun stuff. They work with your built-in assistant of choice. They work with iPhone and with Android. I'm sure they probably work with Windows Phone. They last a good long time. On a charge, I get maybe 5-6 hours out of them. They only take about an hour to charge. I really like this because, as you might be able to see, Jeff, they are clipped together. They're magnetic, so you can throw them around your neck when you're not putting them in, and they snap together. They come with a whole boatload of ear tips on them. They've got these that have hooks on them. They come with Comply foam tips, which I don't know if you've ever used those. But they're really nice. They seal up real good and keep all the outside sound out. It is Bluetooth. You're not going to get the best possible sound, but it sounds great for cutting the grass, for working out, working around the home. Like I said, I really like them. I actually had recommended them to a listener who I know picked up a pair and said that after showing them to his wife, I think he had to go back and buy a second pair. So they're like $35. You get like 4 or 5 colors. They come in red, blue, green, black, and white, I think. I definitely recommend them if you need a reasonable, sounds pretty good. They've got decent bass response. If you get them in nice headphone and you want to go wireless, take a look at them. Like I said, because they're sweatproof, you don't have to worry about getting them nasty. They work really well, and they're not a lot of money. I looked at some more expensive ones in the store, and they were nice, but I wasn't going to spend $100 for a pair of Bluetooth headphones. And at $35, I feel like I got a good deal. So that's what I love, the Phaser BHS 730s. Jeff, what about you? What do you love?
So I'm going to throw out a consumable thing, and I'm going to say that I loved Captain America Civil War.
There you go. I have not seen it yet.
Okay, well, you really need to go see it so that we can do a spoiler cast on it. I feel like, you know, we're coming up on it. It's been out a couple weeks now.
Has it already been out that long? Holy cow, yeah. I am so out of touch. I thought it just came out like this last weekend.
No. It's been out a couple weeks now, so you really kind of need to go see it.
Okay, I'll go get to see it.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw out there that I really loved it. I'm not really going to go into any details other than I don't think this is spoiling anything. The people that, in my opinion, stole the show were Spider-Man and Black Panther.
Really? They got Spider-Man?
Yes, they did.
Sony,
you didn't
had
know
him
that?
No, I don't know anything about it. I thought he was a Sony exclusive Marvel.
Well, not anymore.
Wow.
Sony actually gave the rights to Disney, and there is a Spider-Man Homecoming movie coming out next year that is going to be released by Marvel, by Disney, and distributed by Sony. So that was the deal that Sony made. So Sony will not be making the new Spider-Man. They will only be distributing it, and it will be a Marvel Cinematic Universe Spider-Man coming next year. Marissa Tomei.
So a Spider-Man that doesn't suck.
Plays Aunt May. So it's a MILF Aunt May.
Wait a minute. So I live in a world, I am at an age where Marissa Tomei is old enough to be Aunt May?
Yeah.
When did I get that old?
To be fair, in this cinematic universe, it's his Aunt May. In the comic books and or the cartoons, it's his great aunt.
Okay, but still, so, I mean, I just Googled her, and she's hot. Still a damn fine looking lady.
Yes, she is. Anywho, the young man who played Spider-Man and the gentleman who plays Black Panther, in my opinion, totally stole the movie. Excellent casting, writing. The characters are very true to their comic book nature, and it was a really, really, really good movie. So cool. Probably I'm gonna go, if not the best, the second best Marvel movie ever.
Really? That's high praise.
Yes.
What's the best if it's not Civil War?
Another Captain America one for me, actually. Captain America Winter Soldier, in my opinion, was really good too.
I saw it. I don't know that he's my favorite character.
This movie, it's interesting because it's called Captain America, and it is a Captain America movie, but this is by far not a Captain America story. I mean, it's more...
So it has an ensemble?
It's very ensemble. So really good, really well done. go see it.
I will get to see it, and then we will spoil the heck out of it.
Then we can talk about it. So,
very cool.
Because there was some good stuff in there.
Awesome. Good pick.
So thanks, everybody, for listening to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. We would like your comments. We haven't had it in a few weeks. Even just calling in and saying, Jeff, you're stupid. Captain America Civil War sucked. I will ignore you, but I would still appreciate the sentiment. Give us a call at 317-643-1212. Visit our blog over at www.nobettershow.com. Follow us on Twitter at nobettershow, or he is at not the real Jacob. I am at Jeff_Cheney. If you love the show, we always appreciate it if you could go over and hit our review on iTunes. That helps us become known in the podcasting world. Like it or not, Apple does drive the podcasting favorability. So, Jacob, why don't you throw out the names of our patrons that we love so much?
All right. We want to thank Carl, Dennis, Jamie, Jeffrey, Jimmy, John, Kai, Scott, and Todd. Thank you so much for your support, guys.
Awesome. Hey, if you want to go out and sponsor us as well, head over to patreon.com/nobettershow. We would appreciate anything that you give us. And we're still waiting on those Maseratis. They have not come in yet. We would also accept Teslas.
At this point, I'm holding out for the Apple car.
The Apple car.
Don't even bother sending that Maserati. You just wait until Apple pivots.
Just go ahead and send me two, and I'll take Jacob's four. So anyway, you have now listened to another No Better Than Average podcast. Now I hope you know better than average too. Thank you very much, everybody.
Have a great week, everyone.
Dude, I have been rocking the Linux over here, right there. You can't see it, but
why?
So I have one of my parents' old desktops.
Oh yeah.
That I put Ubuntu on.
Okay.
And Jared wanted to set up a Minecraft server, so I had to download Java, install that, and then I had to install the Minecraft server. And now I'm trying to figure out how to poke a hole in the firewall, which is a royal pain in the ass.
Poke that hole. Why haven't you poked it yet?
Because I couldn't remember my f***ing wireless router password.
All right, I feel like you fail.
So here's the thing. I get in that how many times?
Like, don't you use LastPass?
I use 1Password, but I just don't happen to have that password in there.